I'm Catherine Lanfer, in for John Hockenberry. America is changing. By 2042, minorities will be the new majority. We'd like to know, how is your neighborhood changing right now? Who's moving in? Who's moving out? Tell us at 1-877-8-MY-TAKE, or you can go ahead and email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org. You know, Adora, this morning it seems like we're just doing numbers and change.
Numbers and change.
Change and numbers. So let's move on to some change in Pakistan.
Oh, yeah, there's no question where Pakistani Pervez Musharraf is in a power-losing free fall. Three of Pakistan's four provincial parliaments have declared him unfit for office, and though that's symbolic, they have been followed by a loss in confidence, it seems, by the country's powerful military and also his key U.S. allies. Reports today suggest Musharraf will step down in the next 72 hours rather than face impeachment proceedings scheduled for next week. Christine Fair, a senior political scientist at RAND, has been following all these events, and she joins us now. Good morning, Christine.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. If Musharraf goes, what an earth-shattering change in Pakistan politics.
Well, you know, it's earth-shattering here, but it's not terribly earth-shattering there. Since Musharraf took his uniform off in November, he's actually been powerless. It's been an important change that most people in Washington have certainly been slow to appreciate. And certainly within the Pakistani context, he has been loathed and despised probably from 2006 onward, if not sooner. You know, I was actually somewhat hopeful. I shouldn't say I was hopeful. I had no illusions that he would be impeached. Impeaching him would mean, once the process begins, essentially impeaching the army. And this would not be an outcome palatable to the army. But had the impeachment actually gone forward, though it would have been a low-probability event, that really would have been momentous because it would have been a condemnation of the army's insistence upon its right to intervene in the civilian political setup when things aren't going as they think they should be going.
And not only that, Christine, it would have really been a bit of chaos, wouldn't it? Because you're talking about right now the ruling coalition is a new ruling coalition, not even 6 months old. It's fragile. It's at a time when the country's economy is very weak, and you have many issues with the Northwest Territories. Given all of that, if Musharraf does go, or when he does go, who takes over?
Well, going back to your point about would there be chaos, or even more chaos if there was impeachment, there's already chaos. The problem is, as you noted, is that the two parties that are in a coalition have never been in a coalition before. In fact, they're sworn enemies, all things considered. And oddly enough, it's Musharraf that's kind of been the bondo keeping this jalopy on the road. So the question is whether Musharraf, you know, goes or how he goes. There's a real set of questions about the viability of this coalition. As long as Musharraf was there, the president seat was already occupied. Now that Musharraf is going to go, we're very likely to see Zardari, who is Benazir Bhutto's widow, trying to vie to take over that position of president. President Musharraf, like every other military dictator before him, put into place a series of constitutional amendments that gave him the right to dismiss the government. It's very controversial, but it remains. They've been unable to strip that power from the president, despite the elections. So I would imagine that Nawaz Sharif would feel very uncomfortable with Zardari becoming president, which is, by all accounts, is what he wants to do. By the Constitution, the Speaker of the Senate will replace Musharraf as the president, and that fellow Sumro. He's, you know, neither here nor there. He's a, you know, not terribly politically relevant. And everyone understands that.
More of a bureaucrat, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, most of these politicians aren't really politicians in the sense that we think of them. I was in Quetta in April, and a politician said to me, you know, I actually have no interest in legislating. And my only question to her was, and why are you sitting in the provincial assembly? Couldn't you find another job? You know, more similar to your interests rather than legislating.
It really points to all of the complexities of Pakistan politics, which we could go on endlessly about. But let's move and chat a bit about this uncharted territory that the U.S. now finds itself in terms of Pakistan policy. What calculations do you think the U.S. government is making right now, given how important Pakistan is to the war on terror?
Well, I think people here in Washington have really seen this impeachment issue as a distraction. I actually don't agree with that. This is fundamentally about who is going to govern Pakistan. If we really believe in democracy, then we have to support a process that brings the military under greater civilian control. My view is that this process of impeachment would have been a huge step in that direction, which, by the way, is why the army never would have let this go forward. That would have been the biggest impediment. So fundamentally, the questions about this Musharraf presidency really are at the heart of democratic questions in Pakistan. You know, his second election was extra-constitutional. And to preempt the Supreme Court from saying as much, he simply, you know, ousted justices that were opposed to him.
But what does it do to the U.S. need for the military to help in the Northwest provinces and along the Afghanistan-Pakistan border, given the rise of the Al-Qaeda and the Taliban in the last several months? How does it impact what the U.S. is trying to accomplish there?
Well, see, again, this is where the U.S. kind of doesn't really understand where its allies really lie. So the problem with the military is that the military has decided, not the civilians, that it is not in their interest to continue prosecuting counterinsurgency operations. And the reasons for this are numerous. The first being that they really weren't good at it. They have been repeatedly and decisively defeated in military confrontations with the militants. They are not a counterinsurgency army. They're a huge conventional army raised to really fight Indians on the plains of the Punjab. And they have had, if Americans think that our military has had problems becoming capable in counterinsurgency, they have absolutely no ability to appreciate how horrible and how difficult it's been for the Pakistan army.
So in other words, these questions sound as if they're endless, Christine.
They are absolutely endless.
Christine Fair, we're going to have to leave it there, but thank you so much for joining us. Christine Fair, senior political scientist at RAND, an expert in South Asia and military affairs.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.